Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Happy Hump Day. Welcome into Soccer Morning here on WorldSoccerTalk.com. Hope you're having a good morning. Please ignore the news, because otherwise it'll just ruin your day. I don't mean the soccer news. I mean the real news. The important news. I'm sorry. I'm thrown a little bit by some things that are happening in the world this morning. But we will move on quickly, because we are here to do a soccer show. We are here to be your distraction on a Wednesday morning. We will be with you for the next, 75 minutes or so. We're going to talk about the news and the headlines here off the top. We're also going to talk to our friend Ross Dunbar from DW Sports. He's going to give us some insight on the Bundesliga so far this year. And included in that will be a discussion about Bayer Leverkusen, as they are in the Champions League this evening, well, this afternoon for all of us Americans here, trying to get through Lazio in a Champions League qualifying tie. Let's go ahead and dive straight into the headlines before I end up dwelling on all of that bad news in the world. Let's start with the UEFA Champions League and those qualifying ties. We had games yesterday that have determined who will advance into the group stage for five teams. We'll start with Monaco, who got past Valencia. I'm sorry, that's the wrong way around. Monaco beat Valencia 2-1, but Valencia progresses 4-3 on aggregate, Valencia becoming the fifth team from La Liga to make it into the group stage of this year's Champions League. Malmo, 2-0 over Celtic, goes through 4-3 on aggregate over the Scottish side. Maccabi Tel Aviv with a fairly historic advancement past FC Basel. 3-3 was the aggregate. Maccabi Tel Aviv moving on thanks to the away goals tiebreaker. Shakhtar Donetsk 2-2 against Rapid Vienna yesterday. 3-2 on aggregate. Shakhtar advances. Dynamo Zagreb. Is it Dynamo or Dynamo? I always get those confused. Dynamo Zagreb 4-1. Over Skinderbu Corsay, 6-2 on aggregate. Dinamo Zagreb advances. That will mean I will no longer have to try to pronounce correctly Skinderbu Corsay. Qualifying tie second leg today. Club Bruges at home against Manchester United, trying to overcome a 3-1 aggregate deficit that Man United earned last week. Apoel Nicosia from Cyprus down a goal against FC Astana as they'll try to overcome that deficit. Bayer Leverkusen, aforementioned, down a goal 1-0 to Lazio on aggregate, so they'll have a chance to turn that over at home. CSKA Moscow is down a goal to Sporting Lisbon after the leg in Portugal. They'll play Sporting at home today in Moscow. Partizan Belgrade down 1-0 to Bate Borisov, so that's an opportunity for the Belgrade to get through as well at home. It's Bate Borisov will try to hold on to that slim lead. CONCACAF Champions League, the version we do over here in North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. DC United, 3-0 winners over Montego Bay United, staying perfect in their Champions League group stage campaign. Saprissa doing the same with a 2-1 home victory over Santos Laguna of Mexico. Municipal 2-1 over Santa Tecla. You have games tonight. Olympia hosting the Seattle Sounders, who have a weakened Seattle team as they send down mostly reserves, but some serious contributors to that team will be in that side as they face Olympia on the road. A point would be fantastic for Seattle in that game. San Francisco of Panama hosting Querétaro of Mexico, and Herediano hosting Tigres, one of the obvious favorites in this tournament at this point. In the transfer rumor mill, Everton's John Stones has long been speculation has long been out there that he'll be moving to Chelsea. Or reported that John Stones has handed in a transfer request to Everton, and that Chelsea is readying a £40 million bid for the 21-year-old English center back. Mario Balotelli, he's moving back to AC Milan on loan from Liverpool, and apparently he'll have a good behavior clause in his contract. Gazzetta dello Sport said on Wednesday that the club's chief executive, Adriano Galliani, had based the clause on regulations which are applied to people who serve in the Italian Air Force. Balotelli must not damage the image of the club, and his Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram posts will be closely monitored. He will be banned from extravagant haircuts and clothing, from smoking, and from visiting nightclubs, and must turn up on time for training. His drinking will also be limited. Quite the clause for Mario Balotelli. He said in a statement on his Facebook page, "I'm grateful to Liverpool FC and Liverpool fans for the time and opportunities you gave me. It's not a goodbye, but rather a farewell. I'll be supporting you guys all the way in every competition, unless you face AC Milan." Again, the transfer rumor mill is in full swing. We've got less than a week to go in the transfer window in Europe. That means rumors are flying all over the place. One of the bigger ones is that Manchester United is getting ready to make one more big push for Real Madrid winger Gareth Bale. Obviously, Manchester United has been interested in Bale for quite some time, going back to his Spurs days. Maybe they have the money to make the bid that will pry him away from Real Madrid. Leverkusen winger Song Heung-min has reportedly had a medical or will have a medical at Spurs. Some conflicting reports I'm seeing on Twitter as to whether or not Son will actually make the move or whether he is actually in Leverkusen's squad today in the Champions League, so that bears close watching. Asier Ilarmendi, not going to get that right, apologies, has moved back to Real Sociedad after a stint at Real Madrid. He returns to his former club. And Monaco Vice President Vadim Vasilev, let me try that one more time, has said that the club does not need to sell off stars after crashing out of the Champions League. As I mentioned earlier, Valencia getting past Monaco in the UEFA Champions League qualifying round, and Monaco will not have any more Champions League soccer this season. Obviously a club in the French league trying to make a push not only for a title but for a Champions League glory after last year's solid campaign. Not going to happen in 2015-16. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Ross Dunbar, DW Sports, to talk some German football with him. Stick around. Later in the show, take your phone calls. Don't go anywhere. Be right back.
Facing the crowd. You're talking too loud.
This Sunday, it's the return of MLS Rivalry Week as the New York Red Bulls take on DC United live on Fox Sports 1 at 7 p.m. Eastern. For a different experience, I'd like to invite you to mute the TV and listen to me on Rabble.tv as I share my thoughts and analysis live during the 90 minutes. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. And if you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast, call one of your team's games. It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Red Bulls against DC on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Soccer Morning on a Wednesday. We'll talk a little Germany with our man who covers Germany for Fox Soccer and DW Sports. His name is Ross Dunbar. You can follow him on Twitter at RossDunbar93. Ross, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for having me again.
It's good to have you. Let's start as we take a look at the Bundesliga and certainly at the Bundesliga teams. As they enter their new campaign, we'll start with Bayer Leverkusen. They're at home this evening against Lazio in the qualifying round of the Champions League, down a goal. Give me a reason to believe that this is going to be a good day for Leverkusen and for German football in the Champions League.
Well, I think the nature of two-legged matches are that even though you can win the first leg, it can go horribly wrong in the second leg. I think Bayer Leverkusen's home record is pretty good in Europe. I think they've won 4 of the last 5 games at home. Attacking-wise, they've got a lot of strength. In the first leg, they were the better team, I thought, for long spells in the game, but it was a very, very poor goal that they lost. They have a very inexperienced defender in Jonathan Tah, and he was just outpaced by the Lazio striker, and that was really the only kind of chance that he had in the first leg. So I think Leverkusen can turn it around, but I think given how they've played so far, they've been quite dogged and quite pragmatic and maybe not as scintillating as what we expected. Then it might be a bit of a tough night for them. You never know.
Well, I mean, if it's Lazio's going to try to shut them down. I mean, you go on the road with the goal. I mean, it's only one. It's a very narrow margin, but you sit back, you try to counter, you get that away goal, and you're through. You have an advantage even if Leverkusen gets on the board twice. Is that what you expect out of the Italians?
Well, I mean, the old stereotype of Italian teams is that they're very strong defensively and they're going to shut up shop and not attack. But to be honest, I'm not really that well up on Lazio at the moment, so I don't know whether they're going to come and attack. But from what I read, they seem quite happy with the lead. Miroslav Klose is not fit, so he's not going to play in Germany tonight. So I would think that they would come out and try and get the away goal. I think strategically it's a good way to do it because, like you said, if you get the away goal, and even if Leverkusen score two, mm-hmm. they still got the advantage to go through.
Mm-hmm. Now, the rumors are swirling in the transfer market, of course. We have a less than a week to go. And there's something tied to Leverkusen here, and it's the potential for Sun Heung-min to move to Tottenham Hotspur. I'm just waking up over here, Ross. I'm trying to catch up. I've seen, I've got reports from several places that he's in their sights, that he's even going to have a medical for Spurs. I'm not sure that's happening in Germany or in London. And conflicting reports of whether or not he's in Leverkusen's squad tonight. Have you heard anything about that potential move?
Well, again, there's conflicting reports even within the German media. The story was broken this morning by a regional paper here in Cologne. They said that he would be in London today for his medical. And then, from what I can see in the last half an hour, Sky Sports have said that he's in the squad tonight. So, again, it's very difficult to know what to believe in that situation. I think it's a really interesting move for him because he's a technically very good player, Son, but I wonder if the intensity of the Premier League would be a little bit too much for him. I think we've seen that players from Korea and Japan struggle with that intensity in England. You saw it at the World Cup, they struggled with the intensity, and it would be interesting to see how he would fit in England and whether maybe he would set a precedent for other players coming across in the future.
And for Leverkusen's part, is that a good bit of business? I mean, the report is about £20 million, maybe a little bit more than that, a couple million pounds more. Is that a good bit of business for Leverkusen and something that they can turn around? Would they use that money? Would they try to use that money quickly to strengthen before the window closes, or would they sit on it, maybe wait till January or into next summer?
Well, maybe, I mean, I was thinking about it before we came on air, and I was wondering maybe if they were trying to push a deal just in case they didn't qualify for the Champions League. Maybe it's a kind of like an insurance thing where they can sell on a player and then they have 30 million that would replace the money they would get from the Champions League. I don't know. I think when it's only 1-0, I don't think that's probably what they're thinking, but I think that's probably a bit higher than what he's worth. I mean, 30 million euros, 20 million pounds. It's quite a lot of money for a player of that quality, but I suppose if it's in the English market and you're getting a player of Son's quality for 20 million, I suppose that is good business from Spurs' point of view as well. So I think it would suit both parties. And also Leverkusen have got a lot of good attacking players. They've got guys who can come in and replace him. Julian Brandt, one player that we spoke about before, is a young player who's had a good start to the season, and I think he could come into the team and replace him quite quickly.
Let's talk about, I mean, Leverkusen, obviously one of the better sides in Germany. We've talked about the likelihood of anybody challenging Bayern Munich this season. It feels as though that's a very small chance of that. When you look at the second round of matches from this past weekend, does anything stand out for you? Bayern Munich staying the course, winning away to Hoffenheim. Leverkusen 1-0 over Hanover. I'm not sure where Hanover is, but is that the kind of victory that gives them confidence heading into the midweek Champions League match?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really early in the season to read whether having 1-0 wins against Hanover is a good thing or a bad thing. It might be a good thing because, we tend to associate Leverkusen with really high-pressing and exciting football, but to have shown this kind of pragmatic side in the first few weeks of the season, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that shows that they can go the distance with Bayern. I don't know. I mean, next week would certainly be a really interesting test for them because they play Bayern Munich away from home. So, I mean, that will certainly give an impression as to whether Leverkusen can compete long term. What else stood out for me was Borussia Dortmund. I thought, again, they were excellent, really impressive. I still have my doubts as to whether they can keep pace with Bayern just because it's the first season of Thomas Tuchel, I think even he would admit that those expectations are quite high. But so far, they've been really impressive, and I think by far the most impressive team in the Bundesliga. And at the other end, you've got one of Germany's Champions League hopefuls in Borussia Mönchengladbach, who are bottom of the league after two games, which, certainly is a bit of a surprise as well.
Yeah, certainly. Gladbach, a disappointing start. They lose to Mainz on Sunday. You mentioned Dortmund. Okay, so Dortmund 4-0 winners over Ingolstadt. And the narrative is already out there, Ross, that this is a focused, lean, efficient sort of Borussia Dortmund team that is putting last year's disappointment behind them. They're obviously, you know, they've made a transition with Jurgen Klopp leaving. Is there truth to? I mean, again, it's early. It don't put a lot into these results quite yet. They may not keep up with Bayern Munich, but is there something to be said for Borussia Dortmund finding, you know, learning who they are again and maybe getting back to their old ways?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a coach of Tuchel's quality will certainly reaffirm those kind of initial playing style, the high pressing, the winning the ball back really high up the pitch, you know, creating chances, all those kind of things. You know, that was what Dortmund really impressed early on under Klopp. I mean, I think when Tuchel comes in, I think that's the sort of style they will try and carry forward. But what's really interesting about them this season is that they can do other things. I mean, they can sit back and they can, you know, try and absorb a little bit of pressure. They can play out from the back. So there's so many interesting changes, but at the same time, they are almost re-establishing the old kind of style that Klopp had brought in a few years ago. I mean, I think it's really early to say, but based on what we've seen so far, I've been really impressed. I think what will decide Dortmund's season is probably the bigger games against Bayern, against Wolfsburg, right, against Schalke. Whether they can deliver on those kind of occasions, I think, will decide whether they will be in the top two or three.
Now, in addition to their Bundesliga start, Dortmund also has this comeback in the Europa League qualifying playoffs. They were down 3-0 to Odd Grenland and come back and win 4-3 in that tie. How important is the Europa League to Dortmund? I mean, this is a team that over the last couple of years has been a serious contender for European, you know, for the top European prize. Is Europa League something that they want to show well in to send a message or just for their own edification? Where does it fall?
I think it probably is important to them. I mean, financially, it maybe isn't a top priority. I was reading yesterday, and I think the teams who qualify for the group stages of the Europa League get about €3 million each, which is a massive drop in revenue from being in the Champions League, of course. But I think in terms of the glory and the prestige, I think a team like Dortmund would value that. You know, their fans are really traditional and they would love to play teams like Celtic, for example, in the Europa League or Liverpool or whatever. So I think they'll take it very seriously. And of course, at the end of it now, there's the carrot of a Champions League place. Now, if Dortmund have a bit of a difficult season, they might have that to fall back on. They might have the opportunity to try and get back into the Champions League through the Europa League. So I think actually with Dortmund and Schalke, I think you'll see both teams really pushing for it because that carrot at the end of it is so big.
Is there a difference? Do you think there's a difference for a team? Again, you know, whatever their expectations and their ambitions, is there a difference for a team like Dortmund to start out in this competition, be working towards a Europa League title, knowing that's always the goal, rather than one of these clubs that is qualified for the Champions League and then drops down into the Europa League after being ousted in the group stage? Is there a mentality difference? It seems like, obviously, there's a bit of disappointment when you go from Champions League to Europa League, and maybe somebody like a Dortmund brings a little bit more juice to the tournament.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I think certainly going into the tournament, I mean, they'll be able to get through all these early rounds because they have that in their mind that, you know, once they get into the latter rounds after Christmas, you'll maybe start to get some big games. And I mean, I think the Europa League is really underrated for that kind of thing. I mean, even though the finances aren't very lucrative, you get some really big games between big clubs because, like you say, a lot of teams come out of the Champions League. There are a lot of teams who maybe underperform and go into the Europa League. Teams like Liverpool, for example, would probably go into the Europa League every so often. So, I mean, I think there's certainly an element of truth to that, but I think what certainly helped Dortmund in the early rounds is that rather than playing meaningless pre-season games, they've actually been playing competitive European football. And okay, at the time, it maybe is a bit of a problem because they go into these early rounds not as well prepared as other teams. But when you look at it now, a few weeks on, they're probably in a much better shape because they've been playing competitive football rather than friendlies that maybe aren't as beneficial.
I'm seeing a story that Tuchel has banned pizza and pasta. How important is that? I mean, look, the discussion is how a manager comes into it, especially to a team like Dortmund, which has had so much recent success, which it had an iconic manager in Jurgen Klopp, and is able to put his own stamp on the team. And success breeds success. So coming out of the gate strong is going to serve him well through this season. And you know, obviously it looks like the right choice at the moment, but that's not an easy task, especially replacing someone like Klopp. It's not quite replacing Sir Alex, but it is difficult.
Yeah, I think so. But I think probably the thing that stands in Tuchel's advantage is that Jurgen Klopp's era ended quite poorly. I mean, for the last 18 months, it was a bit of an odd relationship because Jurgen Klopp is so revered in Dortmund. He's quite unique in German football because he is of the kind of ilk of an old-fashioned football manager, not like a head coach like Thomas Tuchel. Jurgen Klopp was a bit more of a manager, and he had that kind of personality that Sir Alex Ferguson had, or Bill Shankly with Liverpool in years gone by. The fans absolutely adored him, but with Tuchel coming in, okay, there's a lot of media spotlight on him, but I think actually having somebody in there who deals with all the minor details and somebody who loves to be on the training pitch, coaching the players, I think that's probably the right move overall, because I think you saw at the end of last season, Dortmund's game was all over the place. I mean, you could see that there was poor organisation, the use of the ball was really poor, and I think Tuchel has done a lot to try and stamp that out in his first few weeks as Dortmund's coach.
Let's talk about a little bit about the rest of the league here. Wolfsburg, obviously, a pretty fancy team with this an attractive style. They get a draw on the weekend against Cologne. Tell me if that's a little disappointing. Obviously, away from home, not always easy in the Bundesliga, but there's also the continuing saga of Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, it's a massive disappointment. I mean, I think if there was a moment to sum up Kevin De Bruyne's transfer saga right now, it was in the 90th minute. Here's Kevin De Bruyne, through on goal, Germany's Footballer of the Year. You expect him to burst the net with it. Instead, he tries a really fancy kind of roll his foot over the ball, and he misses the chance that could have given Wolfsburg 3 points. I think regardless of what Klaus Allof, the sporting director, says, I think there's absolutely no doubt that this transfer saga is having an effect on his performances. He looks a lot more agitated. You know, he gets himself involved in little situations that he wouldn't have got involved in last year. And I think the longer it drags on, the more chance that Wolfsburg will drop points. I mean, Friday's a big game against Schalke. They've already said that they expect Kevin De Bruyne to play in that match. I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or not based on the last two games, but I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens before the end of the transfer window, because this week we've had so many different reports. I mean, we've had reports that Man City want him in the next 48 hours. We've had reports that Bayern Munich want to sign him and loan him back to Wolfsburg. We've had reports that right. PSG want to sign him. Yeah. There's also been a report that Man United want to sign him as well, but they don't want to make the bid public because of previous transfer failures. So, I mean, it's really incredible to keep track of, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Ross, you stole my thunder. I was going to talk about the absurdity of the rumors swirling around De Bruyne at this point, and I've seen something even in as ridiculous as, well, he's having sleepless nights over this. Well, maybe he is, but come on, that's really where we're at now. This needs to have a resolution, and Kevin De Bruyne is very upset, and he wants to push for, and all of that may be true, but eventually this is going to sort itself out, and I don't know why Wolfsburg, with all of the distractions, would be depending on him at this point. Now, again, I asked the question, and we're talking about some of the biggest, richest clubs in the world with Manchester United, PSG, and Bayern Munich in play, if those are the ones that are actually rumored right now, with City being the club most often linked to him. It's a good bit of business for Wolfsburg, clearly, and what does this mean for them going forward?
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure if it is good business, because okay. Really, if you're a team like Wolfsburg going into the Champions League, you need your star quality, and if they don't have a player like Kevin De Bruyne, I mean, I don't think they're going to do very well, and I think even in the Bundesliga, I think they might struggle to finish in the top three positions and get automatic Champions League qualification for next year. So even if they get 17 million euros or 80 million euros, whatever the supposed fee is, it's already too late in the window to buy the best players. So I don't really know if it's good business or not, and I think what would probably suit Wolfsburg is to keep him for one more season and then sell him to Bayern Munich. I think that's probably the ideal situation for them. As for the player, to be honest, I'm not sure as to whether he's necessarily first, but whether he plays in Germany or in England or whatever. I don't think it's a massive concern to him. But whether Wolfsburg want to keep him or whether Man City want to get him now, it's really hard to know what to believe right now, because, like you say, it's the absurdity of so many different reports. And there was talk yesterday about Kevin De Bruyne's agent going to Manchester to finalise the deal. This was from Belgian media. So generally, you'd think that would be well respected, but obviously that wasn't the case. And today he's at Wolfsburg's training ground. So it's impossible to know what to believe in this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we come to that issue again, Ross, where it's in the modern world, in the modern day, footballers actually, they have the power, not necessarily the club. So if De Bruyne is just going to, if he is going to be upset, if he is going to be unsettled, if he's not going to be focused on what Wolfsburg is trying to do this year, even if it's not good business on paper, it's probably worthwhile for them to get him out of the squad and sell him for as much money as they can get this season, because we've seen this story before.
Yeah, maybe that's true. I just think that, for a club like Wolfsburg, who are bankrolled by Volkswagen, and they have, almost endless, wallets of money, I don't think they really have to sell him right now. But I'm sure they would rather have a player of that quality going into the Champions League, because the last time they were in the Champions League, they had an absolute disaster under Steve McLaren. So I don't think they want to have that situation again.
I'm looking at the results. I just talked to our friend David Cartledge in Spain yesterday, Ross. We talked a little bit. First of all, there's not a lot of goals in Spain right now. Who knows why? We're also talking about some of the underdogs, some of the smaller clubs, and certainly the promoted clubs doing some interesting things to start the season, getting some results. Obviously, Real Madrid held by Sporting Gijón was a big deal. Are there any surprises so far? I'm seeing Darmstadt 1-1 with Schalke. That's got to be a surprise.
Yeah, I think we talked about this the last time, that you kind of expect these teams to have good starts to the season because there's that novelty factor around the clubs and that they want to really make an impact and really show what they can do. I mean, Darmstadt's interesting because they were tactically very, very good on Saturday. They played a deliberate long ball game because they knew that Schalke's normal centre-half, Matija Nastasic, was out. So they just threw the ball long into the mixer all the time, and every so often it would fall into a good shooting opportunity, and I think Darmstadt had some good chances in the first half, albeit okay in the second half. They could have lost maybe 2-3-1, but they've had a good start to the season. I would also say that Köln had a good start as well. They've won one game and drawn one game, and they've invested well this summer. They've brought in some good attacking talent. And I think that's a really encouraging start to the season for them. I mean, unfortunately, the top four is the big boys anyway: Dortmund, Bayern, Leverkusen, and Schalke. So there's not a great deal of surprise that you would maybe get in Spain or in England.
All right, let me turn to Friday. We had Hertha Berlin and Werder Bremen. That's a game of particular interest for U.S. fans. There's a couple of U.S. internationals connected to those two, each of those teams respectively. The big move for Americans this summer was Aaron Johansson going to Werder Bremen. There was an opportunity for playing time. There's expectation that he would step right in as a replacement for departed striker. How has he hit the ground so far with Werder?
To be honest, I thought he was quite poor on Friday. He didn't really get himself involved in the game. It wasn't really a great game anyway, but his link-up play wasn't so good, and I don't think there was a real understanding yet with Anthony Uja, the other striker at Bremen. Bremen play with two natural centre-forwards, and they play with one number 10 behind them, so there's a lot of attacking service there for Johansson and Uja up front, but I wasn't really that impressed, to be honest. But I think it's very early days in the season, and obviously John Anthony Brooks was also involved in that game, but he came on with about 30 seconds to go, and he played up front for the last minute of the game. So I'm not sure what that says about his current form at Hertha Berlin.
I don't know what. I'd be interested to know where he is in the pecking order there right now, because clearly he's a player that Jurgen Klinsmann rates as a potential fixture in the U.S. men's national team at center back. He had a rough summer in a lot of ways for the U.S., and whether or not he can find his form in Germany will say a lot about his future. Okay, before we move on to a very different story that's happening at the lower divisions, is there anything else from the Bundesliga so far that stands out for you that as we move into the third round of matches coming up this weekend, Wolfsburg, Schalke, Stuttgart, Bayern Munich and Leverkusen, that's obviously a big match on Saturday. Where's the focus?
For this weekend, yeah, definitely Bayern Munich and Bayer Leverkusen. I think that's going to be a fascinating game because, obviously, we talked about Leverkusen's high-pressing style. Obviously, they've not been able to replicate that this season. But I think if they get themselves focused, they could really do some damage on Friday because Bayern Munich don't have any centre-halves, really, of particular note. Dante hasn't played for the last few weeks. Jerome Boateng, of course, is suspended because he was sent off last week. And Mehdi Benatia probably will be injured for the next 3 or 4 weeks. So I think that's a great opportunity for Leverkusen to really get some momentum. If they can go there and get 3 points, that could be the springboard that they need to have a really good run this season. One other club I think that's really interesting right now is Stuttgart, because for the last few years they've been in and around the relegation zone. They've brought in a new manager this year, but at the same time, they've always had a lot of really good attacking players. I mean, I think a lot of other Bundesliga clubs would love to have the attacking depth that they have, and they had 40 shots in their first two games of the season, and they've lost both games. So that'll be a massive disappointment to them, but I think, based on what we've seen, I think Stuttgart will be safe, and they might be a very interesting team to watch once they get some rhythm halfway through the season.
All right, fair enough. Let's talk a little bit about this. And Ross, when I got you on the line this morning, you said you hadn't necessarily seen this, but we can talk about the situation at RB Leipzig right now with the backing of Red Bull. I think most people, even casual observers of the Bundesliga, understand the ownership rules there. How does Leipzig fit into the wider culture of German football right now? And what's interesting to me is, how are they different from a club like Wolfsburg?
Well, for some background, RB Leipzig were formed 6 years ago, about 2009. They bought the license of a fifth-tier club in the area. The Red Bull delegation had been looking at other clubs. I mean, they've been looking at clubs for years, and they decided to buy out one of the smaller clubs in Leipzig, which was a very unpopular move. I mean, you got to understand that a lot of these smaller clubs have got really hardcore supports. I mean, in Leipzig, for example, you've got a team called Lokomotiv Leipzig, who had a great history before in the East German League, and some of their fans are extremely hardcore, and they thwarted an attempt at a takeover from Leipzig before they actually bought the license of another team. They don't have the 50+1. Sort of rule ingrained in the club, for example, so they don't have a members association where fans can vote for board members. Generally speaking, for the last few years, they've had, I think, 14 or 15 board members, just general paid-up members, but to buy a membership, you have to pay something like €20,000. So, I mean, it really is for the elite few. And if you look at a lot of the names on the list of this members organization, it tends to be people who are involved in Red Bull. So it really is a kind of a marketing operation almost for them, for Red Bull. And generally there is the realization that eventually they are going to get into the Bundesliga because the DFL, the league that runs the Bundesliga and the second Bundesliga, they've not really done a lot to try and stop it. They set three things they had to change last season to get a license. So that would involve, for example, a supervisory board, which in Germany is basically something that is electable. So you have to have people who elect the people on the supervisory board. You have to change your logo, for example, because obviously the logo was just the Red Bull logo. They had to change that. So they've obviously adhered to all of these measures, but I find it quite interesting that a lot of teams who maybe aren't as successful have had to, they've had to go along with the 50+1 rules and all these kind of financial fair play rules, but yet Red Bull Leipzig can come into the league and they can spend what they want and they can switch players between Red Bull Salzburg, you know, whenever they want.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, and it certainly is not popular at all wherever you go in Germany, I think. And I think that's probably the worrying thing is that, you know, we talked about, you know, the fan problem in Germany, that that might intensify when they get into the Bundesliga.
Yeah, certainly. And the reason this is coming up right at this this very moment is that Union Berlin fans are planning a 15-minute silent protest over the obviously the corporate backing, the spending, the oddness of what Red Bull Leipzig or RB Leipzig is at this point. And you could not have two teams further from each other in terms of the spectrum. Union Berlin, if I'm not mistaken, one of the cult clubs of Germany, certainly a club that has fans, you know, very intimately involved in the operation of that club. So that's that it makes sense that they would be someone that the supporters there would be the people to make a statement about what Leipzig is doing.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you couldn't get two clubs further from each other. Union Berlin fans, very community orientated. I mean, they built part of their own stadium. You know, so I mean, I think that tells you everything you need to know about the commitment of those fans. I think last year they already had a protest against Leipzig, if memory serves me right, and they dressed in black. Everybody in the stadium dressed in black. I don't know if you remember that. It did, you know, it was quite prominent on Twitter and stuff like that. So I think a lot of these clubs do protest quite regularly. I mean, there's been the No to Red Bull Leipzig campaign. You tend to see these banners at most matches involving Leipzig. Last weekend when they played St. Pauli refused to show the Red Bull logo on their website. So when they were obviously advertising tickets and it said St. Pauli against Red Bull Leipzig, there was no logo for RB Leipzig, and they obviously were trying to prove a point that what they're doing is obviously not particularly good. And I don't think it's a good development for German football, because I think you can see that a lot of these teams who are bankrolled by companies, Wolfsburg, Bayer Leverkusen, RB Leipzig, Hoffenheim, they are becoming ever more prominent ahead of the clubs who maybe have to fight for their cash a little bit more.
Yeah, it's certainly a culture clash there in Germany. It's very interesting to see down in the second division right now. And if RB Leipzig ends up moving up to the Bundesliga, I can only imagine how much that will be in the general discussion about the future of German football. Ross Dunbar from Fox Soccer and DW Sports joining us to talk about the Bundesliga and beyond. Ross, fantastic as always. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
No problem. It's always a pleasure. Have a good day.
There goes Ross. Good stuff from him. We open up the phone lines when we come back, and I'm going to have a little discussion about what makes for growing American soccer. Some news yesterday. Be right back. Soccer Morning, WorldSoccerTalk.com.
Strings on a broke guitar.
This Sunday, it's the return of MLS Rivalry Week as the New York Red Bulls take on DC United live on Fox Sports 1 at 7 p.m. Eastern. For a different experience, I'd like to invite you to mute the TV and listen to me on Rabble.tv as I share my thoughts and analysis live during the 90 minutes. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. And if you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast, call one of your team's games. It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Red Bulls against DC on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Soccer Morning, Wednesday morning. Ready to talk to you, the people, the American soccer public. 646-832-3909 is the phone number. Twitter is killing me right now. That's the worst thing I could possibly say. Excuse me. Twitter is making me depressed right now. It's unbelievable what's happening in the world. But we move on. We talk soccer. Let's do that. Let's distract ourselves here. Take a moment to reflect on how messed up the world is and then move on to talk about some soccer. 646-832-3909. Before we dive into the calls, and I see that they're coming in, just a quick statement here from me on something that came out last night on the interwebs, on the Twitter nets. The announcement from a couple of gentlemen who do a podcast and a TV show on NBC Sports, where they wear blazers. They talk about soccer. They're both gentlemen from over the pond who have made their home in the United States for a very long time. They're very popular. They're very popular. I cannot hate on the fact that a lot of people listen to them and watch the show, and good for them. They're having a convention, these two gentlemen. They're calling it BlazerCon. I'm sure you've seen it if you're an American soccer fan, because it's everywhere. It says the first annual BlazerCon was motivated by a desire to create a forum where the best global football minds could engage directly with an audience of Americans from across the nation who have fallen truly, madly, deeply in love with the game. Essentially, what we've got here is British people selling you on British soccer. And hey, you know what? Again, if that's your thing, that's fine. It's fine. I am just continually gobsmacked, to borrow a phrase, to borrow a term, by the American soccer public's need to find validation through the accents of British people selling them the sport. I mean, we are incapable of creating a completely unique and truly American soccer culture without taking our cues from somebody else. And maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe there's nothing we can do about that. Maybe as fairly new kids on the block, there's nothing we can do but take our cues from people with accents. But I'm looking at these panels, and by, you know, I know there's money going to Hope for Warriors, so that's good. And I've read, you know, they get a write up in the New York Times, these guys, and it says, hey, they're going to have a convention for soccer fans in Brooklyn, and everybody, blah blah blah, $425. I'm sorry, $225 to go, 2-day admission pass, to hear people talk like Richard Scudamore, executive chairman of the Premier League, and Ian Ayre, chairman of Liverpool, and Ferran Soriano, City Football Group and Manchester City FC chairman, or sorry, CEO. Barry Hearn, honorary president, Leighton Orient, chairman, Matchroom Sports. James Pelota, okay, there's an American, chairman of AS Roma. Ray Hudson, who is obviously a fixture in the world of American soccer broadcasting, has been here for a long time. I don't begrudge them the right to do this. And again, the proceeds are going to charity. How can I possibly hate on that? But again, we are continually taking our cues from other cultures. And it's one of those things. I mean, obviously I'm in a position here that no matter what I say, it's going to sound like sour grapes. I'll hold up my hand and admit to that. I'm an American soccer fan with an American accent who wants to talk about American soccer most of the time. I mean, we just talk about Germany. I'm fine doing it. And I have no shame in where I'm from or my appreciation of the sport. I don't think that Ross Dunbar cares about my accent, but Americans certainly do. Americans certainly care where you sound like you're from when you talk about soccer. I mean, we just have a nation of Anglophiles. That's what it is. That's what it is. I mean, and maybe we can eventually carve out a niche here. And the funny thing about this is that mere days before this thing dropped, Trevor Hayward and I got an email that asked about our interest in perhaps putting together something very similar to this, with Soccer Morning as a potential centerpiece or involved. I mean, not a centerpiece, but involved. It wouldn't be Soccer Morning Con, but it would have been something along these lines that would have featured Soccer Morning as a contributing part of the event. So that's part of it. It's just that's funny to me. And you know what? And I say this with all humility as much as I can. I know that convention up there in Brooklyn will probably sell out. It probably will. I imagine that lots of people will go and have a great time. I don't know about the price. Again, charity, et cetera, et cetera. It's probably cost a lot of money to get all those people on board or get the space, even if they are donating their time because of the charity element, to limit the access, to and again, it's not necessarily that you're having a convention and you're having a bunch of British soccer voices there. Let's bring in Richard Scudamore. Let's bring in Ian Ayre. It's not that. It's that you doing it here, selling it to Americans and making it again. There's this notion that they're growing the game here. When my opinion, my personal opinion is, if you're growing the game here, then you're the game is MLS. The game is the U.S. national team. And don't hitch your wagon to the national team because it benefits you. I would love, you know what I would love? I'm going to say this right now. Okay. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as possible here. I'm not angry about it. I have nothing against these people individually. But I would love to be able to stick my tongue deep in my cheek and say things like, the United States is going to win the World Cup. I don't get to do that. I don't. You know what happens if Jason Davis, American soccer guy, says the United States is going to win the World Cup, whether I mean it or not? What's the world come down on my head? Are you kidding me, stupid Yank? How could you possibly think that? And you know what? We have a lot of self-hating soccer fans in this country. A lot of self-hating American soccer fans. Those are my favorite people. You are my favorite. You self-hating American soccer fans are my favorite people. The American soccer fan who was born and raised here, who maybe has a grandfather from Europe, who wants to claim expertise on the global game, act like you have some sort of greater understanding, preach to Americans about how terrible MLS is, how bad the national team is, how we'll never have a star player here, we'll never have a good team. That those people drive me nuts. And I'm my perception is that much of the audience that might be heading to Brooklyn on November would be those kind of people. I mean, it's just, you know, again, my personal feelings about this are very convoluted. They're very complicated. 646-832-3909. We don't have to talk about this. We don't. You don't have to come. You don't have to call me up and agree with me. You don't have to come and call me up. And if you want to call me up and disagree with me, that's absolutely your right. Feel free to do so. I have the same opinions, and you guys have heard, if you've been listening to me long enough, you've heard me go off on the need for the English voice in the American soccer broadcast booth. How that is a thing that says a lot about where our American soccer culture is. Because here's the thing. Not only do we have an inferiority complex, which is evident every single day, we don't trust ourselves. American soccer doesn't trust itself. American soccer doesn't trust itself to make itself American. That's the inferiority complex feeding that problem. We don't know if we are truly American, is that good enough? Is that, you know, go to, there are some distinct worlds out there. This is one of the things that makes American soccer fascinating, but at the same time is frustrating. Go to an event like the NSCAA convention. The National Coaches Convention. Go to that event. It's huge. It's massive. There's a lot of people walking around in tracksuits. There's a lot of people walking around in polos with club logos on them. I don't mean professional logos. I mean clubs. There's a lot of college kids, a lot of college coaches, a lot of college soccer elements. People hawking their wares. That's American soccer. To me, that's American soccer. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with it. Then go to the local soccer pub on a Saturday morning and watch the people who watch the Premier League there. Tell me what the difference is. Roberto, you're on the air. What's up?
You know something, Jason? I wouldn't go to that convention anyway, and I'm not any self-hating MLS fan, but you look at the various huge amount of, I guess you could say, a new generation of fans that are coming in for the sport to rise, I guess you could say, the culture of soccer in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it's my fundamental problem with the notion that you're selling, that you're trying to grow the sport in America. You're trying to help it grow, and you're giving a place for all these fans to come together, and your panel reads like a who's who of European football. I mean, good for them that they got Ian Ayre to show up. I know that one of them has direct ties to Liverpool. Good for them that they got Ferran Soriano to show up. Good for them that they got Rebecca Lowe and Richard Scudamore, the freaking executive chairman of the Premier League. Good for them. But how does that help American soccer? Because American soccer's growth is tied to American soccer. You can get, look, we could have millions and millions of people watching the Premier League every weekend. That means it would be a popular sport in America. But would that actually feed anything in terms of the sport's actual growth here? Please.
And let's get the biggest names in American soccer journalism, the biggest names in MLS.
If you were, how about this? We'll throw this out there because Roberto's on the line. And I will fully admit, I sound like I'm whining. I sound like sour grapes. I'm in the same business. It's hard for me not to come off like a guy who is coveting what they have. Okay. And they both work very hard. They're both TV guys as well. They have other things going on beyond their soccer thing. I'm focused solely on this. I don't have a documentary on US soccer coming out next month. It's not happening for me. But if you were interested at all in sort of some sort of counter programming to this, and I don't mean like right on that same day. I don't mean like we're going to show down with them like West Side Story style and have a dance off. I just mean like if we put together something here, whether it's us or World Soccer Talk or backheel.com or we reached out to some other people. I know there are marketing companies and American soccer interests in this country who may have a plan. May want to do something. If you were interested in some sort of American soccer counter programming to this, let me know. Send me a tweet. I don't know. Send us something at backheel.com. Let us know, because I'd be curious to know if there's any interest in that or if this is where it lies right now, Roberto. This is what people want. People want a convention with Richard Scudamore talking about the Premier League in America. That's what we want.
Yeah, of course. And I don't disagree with your idea at all. I'm for it. That's for sure.
Okay, fair enough. What else do you want to talk about, Roberto? I don't want to steal
anyway,
your time. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted my, I guess I could switch forward to real football now.
Please.
I don't agree with the fact that Chelsea would want Pogba. Firstly, I don't think he would go. I don't think it's necessary for him to go to Chelsea yet, at least at this moment. For a huge amount of price, you got $100 million, but I'm not for it at all. I think if he does go, he would have to go after Euro 2016.
Okay. What's the price tag on him right now?
I heard £100 million.
£100 million. So something like 130. Yeah. Wait, what is that? That's like 130 million euros or something like that. Excuse
something
me.
Something around there. It's gonna break the transfer record. That's what I've heard.
I think we're sorry. I've been talking too much. I think we're getting way ahead of ourselves on Pogba. He's obviously an immensely talented player. And I think we got ahead of ourselves on Bale. I think Real Madrid, they can afford it. And maybe that's part of it, too. Well, they can afford it in the sense that they're a giant club who has incredible revenue. They do have some issues with the Spanish government, with something to consider. But it's out of control. It is. It's out of control. And he definitely should wait until after Euro 2016. In my mind, I'm with you on that, Roberto. If you put that much money into one player, you just put so much on his shoulders. You make it so difficult for him to live up to that transfer fee. And look, I know the younger a player is and the more he's shown, the higher the price is. But really, and Pogba showed no signs of being fragile mentally. But at the same time, like, how do you walk into a team like Chelsea, an established team with an overbearing manager, or any club, I mean any club, Manchester United, Chelsea, PSG, with big figures in it, and you're the £100 million player. I mean, that's just got to be hard.
And that was the pressure Bale was going into when he went to Real Madrid, and Kaká as well, before Ronaldo broke his transfer record as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm telling you, he's not. I don't think he feels the pressure. I hope he doesn't feel the pressure of being worth $100 million, but it's just not necessary for him to go at this age for that amount of money.
Yeah, I'm with you, Roberto, man. You got anything else on the transfer market before I let you
go? No, I'm good.
I appreciate it, man.
Have a good day, Jason.
All right, there goes Bill. I'm sorry, Bill. Roberto in Connecticut. Let's talk to Bill in Queens. What's up, Bill?
Hey, Jason, I wanted to jump back in on the U.S. thing you were talking about a couple seconds ago.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, so the one thing about having a bunch of outsiders, foreigners, speaking on a panel about U.S. soccer is that I feel like a lot of the leading U.S. voices or the people that you would want to have there, your Don Garbers, your Sunil Gulatis, are just going to speak as salesmen for and for the program.
Okay, well, like
if we're going to get an objective kind of opinion about how, the sport is developing in this country, that we do kind of need an outside voice, because the inside voices are always going to tell us
I don't think these people are talking about U.S. soccer. Bill, I don't think these people are coming up on a panel to talk about the growth of U.S. soccer. They're coming up to talk about the Premier League. They're coming up to talk about Liverpool in the case of Ian Ayre. They're coming up to talk about City Football Group. I mean, Soriano may talk NYCFC, but it's going to be through the prism of what they've done in Manchester. I mean, James Pelota is not going to come up and talk about American soccer. He's talking about Roma. He's talking about selling the brand of Roma in America. I mean, I lament the condition that leads to a very difficult path for American soccer concerns, and I'll include MLS and NESL and anybody else who wants to put money into the American game. It's a tough situation. You've got to compete with the Premier League and with the La Liga and with all of these other things that are streaming in here. That's a situation that I'm not angry at anybody. I'm just sort of disappointed that that's the condition under which American soccer has to grow. And here we are with, again, the outward notion of growing the game in America or giving Americans a place to come together. And America's sport of the future since 1972, which I know they love to say, and all they're selling is the foreign game.
Right, and it's the kind of thing where, if you look at the big European leagues, they get better ratings than our domestic league here.
Okay.
And if you're going to get, for the sake of argument, if you're going to get a million people into, one of those leagues every year, if you can just get a handful of those to come out and support their local MLS team, then you're going to grow. I'm one of them.
I'm not saying that people shouldn't watch the Premier League. I'm not saying that people shouldn't care and not be interested in what these people have to say. As a soccer fan, I'm interested in what they have to say. But you've made this a very exclusive event. People dropping over $200 to go for a couple of days. And again, to listen. And it's under the auspices of this is what Americans want. And that's what offends me, because I think Americans, what they should and shouldn't want, I guess that's not my place to judge. But again, to sort of dress this up in red, white, and blue, which is what has happened pretty regularly over the course of the last couple of years. And again, hitching the wagon to the U.S. men's national team. That doesn't fly. That doesn't fly for me. I mean, I can't sit here and praise the U.S. national team and then go, I'm obviously just kidding. Listen to my accent. It must mean that I'm making a joke, because no one's going to take me seriously.
Right.
No one's going to give me the benefit of the doubt. So again, you have a very unique situation where the amount of leeway given on this stuff is insane to me. That's all. I've said this several times. I'm not begrudging anybody the right to go out and do their thing and find their niche. And they found their niche. And I'm glad they exist, because it actually shows that there is a market for this stuff, what I'm trying to do. But on a bigger picture, beyond my interest, beyond this show, beyond the future of American soccer commentary by Americans, there is the issue of Americans refusing to allow for an American culture to develop without having to turn to, this guy's trying to teach me about, I don't know. Sorry, Bill. I mean, I probably sound like a jerk right now.
Well, it's like I treated you earlier. We're still in the mimicry stage. That we're still in a stage of imitation.
But when will we not?
Acquiring our influence.
Okay, but when will we not?
It's going to be a matter of time until someone decides to act on that and make it, something unique and ours.
Okay. All right. Okay. So the mimicry elements, again, taking our cues from influences abroad. I understand that. I've defended the Sons of Ben against allegations of fake hooliganism, which, is not a thing that they're really doing. And when an English writer comes over here and says, oh, look, they're play acting, that offends me, because, these guys are just trying to support their team. Maybe they're borrowing a little bit. There are some times when it goes too far. You know, the stupid fight between NYCFC fans and the Red Bull fans and the "who are you" chants from a bunch of Americans. Come on. You know, they're
well, it's like, you know, when anyone starts playing guitar, they, you know, they learn a couple Green Day and Nirvana songs, and then after that they try to start doing things that are more uniquely theirs. I mean, you know, the Beatles had all the time at Hamburg playing Chuck Berry songs and put in the 10,000 hours they needed to develop their own style and their own talents. And right now,
artistic,
we're still in that phase.
Artistic impression, I don't know if I'm going to buy that analogy. It's there, Bill. It's on the table. Thanks for the call, man. I'm not sure I buy in that analogy that somehow this is like the Beatles playing Chuck Berry songs. But it's, I don't know. Let's talk to Chris in Connecticut. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, Jason, how you doing? This is a great show. It touches on, has touched so far on two things that I'm really into, Bundesliga soccer and also the American side of the sport. I'm German-American. I grew up in Germany, moved to the States at age 17, so got the American accent.
Yeah,
so I can
wow.
sound like everybody else. Well, my dad was a serviceman over there, so I'm actually sort of kind of like some of those guys on our,
gotcha.
On our U.S. national
yeah.
team. Got the dual background going. So
I understand. That's good.
I agree with you for the most part about this latching on to the English standard as the gold standard being, you know, counterproductive in developing our game here. But I do think that American fans, well, I hope at least, I think that optimism that American fans are sophisticated enough to be able to hold multiple identities when it comes to their soccer. I mean, I do.
Okay.
I have a Bundesliga team I grew up with. I've been a Reds fan since the since 0 hours since they were founded. I feel like we can do multiple identities, and I do agree with you that this, as the other caller put it, this mimicry is taking on forms that are almost absurd. Because I feel like this the blazer wearing men that whom I followed when they were on ESPN. Are now, they've hitched their wagon to NBC, and NBC's gone all in on English soccer, and I find that a little bit disturbing as well.
And again, we come back to questions. Thanks for the call, Chris. We come back to questions sure. of the free market and capitalism and, you know, business decisions, and NBC Sports is putting their money into a product that they think can pay dividends for them on the backside. They're going to make money out of backing the English Premier League, and good for them. I missed a call from Washington. Washington, call me back. At the same time, and look, that's fine. That's fine. I like watching the Premier League. I do. Don't you? I do. But that doesn't mean that. I don't know. It's a difficult question. It has a lot to do with our identity as soccer fans in this country. And look, there's a very good point to be made by Chris, that we are somehow multiple personalities as we go along here, as we grow up as a soccer nation. We want to be many different things at once. And look, there's plenty of room with the growing fan base of soccer fans in this country for there to be many niches. I'm not begrudging anybody the right to throw this thing or put it up as interesting. Would I listen to Richard Scudamore for an hour and on panel? Probably. Yeah, if I give him the opportunity. I'm not paying $225 for it, but I would probably go and listen. But does that mean that it's okay to dress the whole event in the notion that this is what American soccer fans are looking for? I don't. This event does not preclude there from being another event. And maybe that's where I'm concerned, is that we haven't reached a point where anybody's willing to back something different that is about what we've got here, what we've got going on in the American game. It doesn't mean it doesn't mean you're banned because you have an accent. It doesn't mean that Brits aren't allowed. It means that we need to recognize that there's a whole lot of things across a big spectrum. Now, I'm just joking on Twitter last night that we need a very American soccer convention that has people like Frankie Hajduk and Eddie Johnson and Jack Edwards. And I was joking about Jack Edwards. I also said that, hey, you know, I don't know. His recollection of 2002 would be fun. Maybe we need to unite all the people who say upper 90, because that seems to be a very American thing. I don't know. We have a level of shame. Sometimes professional soccer fans have a level of shame in this country that boggles my mind. And I have so many conversations out in the world that begin with, "Oh, you're a soccer fan?" And I go, "Yeah, I actually cover soccer. I do a radio show." "Oh, yeah? Who do you cover?" And I go, "You know, MLS, national team." "Oh, yeah, well, I only watch the Premier League. I only like Aston Villa. Or I only like Arsenal." You know what? That's fine. That's your choice. But it speaks to something else here. What's up, Henry?
Hey, good morning, Jason. I just wanted to talk to you about the issue you had with the conference. Now, I like soccer. I'm borderline obsessed with it. And the main issue I have with your argument is people don't have as much access to the MLS as they do, say, the Premier League or La Liga or the Bundesliga, et cetera.
They don't have as much access? What are you talking about?
There's two games on, three if you count Univision Deportes.
Okay.
On a week.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I can watch every single Premier League game if I want to with the overflow channels, NBCSN. But I'd have to buy Direct Kick or something like that. And I think people just don't want to spend that money, myself included. So it'd be easier if they actually, maybe ESPN carried more games or something like that.
I don't know if that's the argument. I mean, look, MLS could do better. I mean, in terms of its TV presence, but clearly MLS is not in a position to demand that time yet. But there is, I'm not even arguing for MLS over the Premier League. That's not even the essence of my argument. The essence of my argument is for you to stand up and go, soccer in America is a big thing. Here are all these British people. You know, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't even know if there's a good reverse analogy here, a way to describe how this might work somewhere else, because I don't think there's another sport that travels the way that soccer does. I just think that, again, you know, the sponsors for this thing are EA Sports, Adidas, and Cooper Mini. Do you think those three sponsors would step up and back a convention that was entirely based on people who were working on the game here? You know, if it
would generate the money, they would. But I guess maybe because it hasn't been, the MLS doesn't generate that kind of revenue, not yet.
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with revenue. It has everything to do with, again, with the cultural
element.
Well,
they want to sell those tickets.
Well, sure. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, look, there's a lot of things to unpack here. And again, I don't get them. I don't find them humorous. I mean, that's just my taste. That, again, I don't necessarily begrudge anybody the right to go listen to them and enjoy them. I mean, I got people on Twitter. I don't watch, Men in Blazers don't really bother me. What I really hate is Americans who go to games and chant with an English accent. Okay, that's John Rickerman. Let's see. I'll listen to Men in Blazers because it's funny, like Monty Python is funny, and they don't appear to be asshats. That's a weird comparison to make, putting them on the level of Monty Python. But that's fine. Again, it's this notion that
it's frustrating, isn't it?
It's frustrating because I think all of these things can coexist. I really do. But I definitely have a feeling. There's definitely this instinct that too often we turn. And it started with coaches in the late 70s and early 80s, and it's continued on through now with the people on television and the people telling us about the game. I mean, I'm sure that Kyle Martino still gets massive abuse every time he's on NBC Sports because he doesn't have an accent, because he didn't play in England, even though he's a really smart guy who understands the game intimately and can explain things in a very simple way that helps the average fan understand the sport. You know what I'm saying? That's where I'm at. I'm glad that they hired him. I'm glad that they hired Kyle Martino because it does kind of buck against this trend. But when we talk about who you hire to be the play-by-play voice of Team A and Team B, and more often than not, what we're going with is executives who say, you know what, we really need a British guy. Like that's something. Like we really and the argument, oh well, there's no good American soccer announcers. Okay, well. Honestly, are you looking for them? Are you trying to give an opportunity for that? Whose responsibility is that? Are we ever going to get to the point where we trust American soccer broadcasters? John Strong, there's got to be more than one John Strong in the world. I mean, I love the guy. He's amazing. I'm sure there's somebody else out there who can approach that level. And yet, I wonder if any of them are getting a chance. Steve Cangelosi.
Now, when you say broadcasters here, are you speaking just as a broadcaster or a color commentator? Because it seems with the MLS games, getting Taylor Twellman, you're getting Alexi Lalas. So these are Americans in the game commenting on the games.
Yes, you're right. I think that we have a different idea of who can. I guess the issue is that the narrative voice is more often than not the one with the accent. We want the narrative voice to tell to be one who sounds cultured and fits this image we have of what soccer is. And we've been conditioned, and that's the thing. Again, if ESPN decides that the best thing for them to do is to have a British voice calling their games, they're doing it because that's what the public wants. Well, why does the public want that? That's what I'm getting to. So what's the basic cultural condition that creates a situation where American soccer fans go, you know what, I can't listen to JP Della Camera. I need to have an accent.
I think you might be getting with it a little too much. Now, I'm relatively new to the game, and that's all I know is an English commentator. So I didn't even realize that it's such big an issue. So I guess your part to bring it up.
Some people aren't. Some people don't think it's an issue. It's so tough. It's all part of this, this stew that we have going on here. I see American soccer is very fractured. And when I say American soccer, I mean fans who are fairly new to the game, who are turning more often than not first to European leagues, be it the Premier League or something else. I'm talking about guys who have been working, Americans who have been working as coaches for 30 years, who probably won't get the respect that they deserve because, hey, they're Americans. What could they possibly know? You know, stuff like that. That stuff still holds on. That's where my frustration, comes out. And again, it's this notion that as Americans, we sort of just open our arms instead of saying, "Hey, let's see what we've got going on here, and maybe our own culture can be, maybe we can develop our own culture." Whether that means some Latino influence and some European influence, and mix them all together and throw them out, and maybe some college sports influence from what we've been doing for the last century when it comes to those things. Instead of doing that, we sort of just go, "Well, hey, here's a British guy. They really love soccer. They really know soccer." I mean, I don't know. It's really difficult to put into words that make a lot of sense, Henry, which maybe says something about the whole argument. I appreciate the call, man.
All right, take care.
There goes Henry. All right, last call on this. I'm done. I really am. I'm done. John in Dallas, you're on the air.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm feeling like I'm floundering a bit here, John. It is what it is.
Let me get some clarification. I want to chat with you about this, your comments on, because we've kind of been all over the map. There's been a lot. You've said a lot, right? And I want to get some clarification because you're talking about things like, you mentioned guys coming up to you and saying, "Oh, you cover MLS? Well, I only watch the Premier League, and even then, I only watch Aston Villa." Or people shouting, "Who are you, Chance?" from the supporter sections. And you mentioned a number of things like that kind of go in the same family that you were. I don't know if you say against them, but maybe let's just call it less than pleased with those types of things. But, and then there's this whole notion of this convention that's being put on that you've talked about, that I get from you that you're, not that they don't have the right to put it on, not that you're necessarily upset that it's being put on, but that it's,
that it sticks.
I don't know. Those are the dots that I'm having a hard time connecting with what you're saying.
This is obviously more than just this actual event. This has a lot to do with, sort of the act that's been going on for quite some time. And part of that act is, for a long time, making fun of American efforts to play the sport, focused very much on the English game. And then when it suits their needs, turning into rah-rah USA. "Hey, Americans, we're supporting you. America, soccer's the sport of the future in America," tongue-in-cheek. "Go USA, we're going to win the World Cup anytime something happens." Again, it's very convenient and very easy for them to sort of latch on to whatever enthusiasm comes with an American soccer product and then turn their back the second that goes away. It's a little bit unfair. Okay, when I say unfair, what I mean is, for a guy like me, I can't go on the air, make a bunch of jokes about the U.S., how much the U.S. sucks at soccer, because then I'm the self-hating soccer fan. And then when it time comes for the World Cup, go, yay, you know, Tim Howard is the brick wall, and give everybody clever nicknames and hitch my wagon to a U.S. national team that's very popular in that moment. That's what bothers me a bit.
Sure, sure. I'm with you, by the way. So, but let me ask you this, I tweeted this at you a little bit ago. Let's see what your response is. But you know, so I haven't been following this announcement at all. I just kind of really found out about it when you mentioned it this morning. So there may be something that I missed. But because you're talking about growth of the game in this country and this convention, was that one of the stated goals of this convention? Was it growing the game in the United States?
Hold on a second. I had the page up. I think I've closed it now. But there's very much this tone that this is feeding America's growing appetite for soccer, and maybe they're couching it in the fact that, you know, hey, Americans love the Premier League, and that's all that really matters. But again, I mean, it's I don't even know if it's about the convention. I think the convention is just the tipping point for me a bit. We will do anything to grow the game in this country. This is the logical next step. So there you go. That was said in a New York Times write-up on this. And again, I mean, you know, the fact that they're on NBC, the fact they have that sort of clout gives them the opportunity to get that sort of publicity, to be written up in the New York Times for this convention. But again, for me, these guys have been here for a very long time. I'm pretty sure that they have very strong connections to the United States. I'm not claiming that they're not lovers of America, or that they're only here to make a quick buck and leave, or take advantage of an American soccer public. I mean, clearly they love what they love. I'm more focused on the notion that Americans continually need validation from people with accents in order to feel good about American soccer, and they feed that, as you know, they're taking advantage of that. Maybe the fault lies with, or what I'm viewing as the fault lies with both parties.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more, Jason. That's what I was just trying to get to. I all these points that you've made about, you know, American soccer fans needing, you know, validation, and you said a lot there. I'm with you on all that stuff. What I wasn't connecting was how this particular conference really, I don't know, is related to that. But I mean, if that is their point, if part of their point here is to grow.
Yeah, sorry, I don't mean to jump in here, but I'm going to throw in another quote, because this is from the senior marketing manager at EA Sports, one of the sponsors of this convention. Okay. He says, I think what this will help do is grow the sport even more. We all get really excited about growing the sport of soccer, not necessarily growing our personal brand, but growing the sport itself. And again, I'm sure EA Sports has done a lot of stuff with MLS. I don't know that I can't make that, because I can't prove a negative. I can't make that argument that if somebody called up and said, hey, we're having a convention. Oh, yeah, who's coming and who's running it? Well, it's this American guy and this American guy, and we're going to have, you know, a bunch of people who are tied to the growth of the American game, whether EA Sports steps up with the same sort of support. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I'm wrong about that. That's probably unfair of me, but that's what my gut says. My gut says that if you don't have the accent, if you aren't selling the English game, then you're probably not going to get the same sort of support here. And that, again, speaks to the market and speaks to the people who are watching soccer and the growing community of people who watch soccer and what they're interested in and what they decide that they want to value. And they want to value, they want to value the English game and turn their nose up at American soccer in all its forms, not just MLS, but all its forms.
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of a tangential thing there, right, is that how do we overcome, because a lot of the problem is the star power far and away exists in the English Premier League that we don't even have that same level in MLS, and what people like ESPN and NBC and I suppose Fox to a degree are doing, they're shoving down your throat every star player from every English Premier League team on SportsCenter. You know, you get a little bit of MLS, but largely you're getting, and not even English Premier League, by the way, you're getting the Ronaldos and the Messis and those guys. And so So the general sports fan is drawn to the English Premier League, to La Liga.
It's not the leagues that I care about. It's not the popularity of the leagues. It's not the fans who want to watch. I watch the Premier League. I like the Premier League. I enjoy watching the Premier League, but I don't feel the need to start talking about pitches and boots. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't feel the need to get together with a bunch of my friends and run around and sing English football chants and act like and call ourselves the Third Street Hooligans. You know, that's the line for me. That's where Americans lose the. Here we go. I'm going to steal something. They lose the plot, saying it tongue-in-cheek, because I know that that's not an American phrase. That's an English phrase. And occasionally I'll slip I'll slip up and say pitch or something. And we're all a product of our influence. John, I got to run. I apologize. This is a really long show. Thanks for the call, man. We're all product of our influences. And occasionally I'll say pitch or I'll say, you know, I'll use an English football cliche and it's all there. But we also, it's not necessarily doing that that bothers me or should bother you. It's the notion that the American equivalent is second best or second or not good enough. Or we need to, you know, don't call them cleats because that's American. Ew, call them boots. No. If you want to call them boots, fine. There's nothing wrong with calling them cleats. There's nothing wrong with saying field. There's nothing wrong with saying zero instead of nil. All of these things. Maybe we're moving on from that, and maybe we're becoming a more mature soccer culture. And maybe I'm wrong about all of this, and I fully admit. All right, let's wash the taste out of the mouth a little bit. Rob, your last call. It's a long show. Go ahead.
Man, I feel really guilty because I'm calling in about the Premier League question.
No. And look, I'm happy to talk about it.
No.
I'm happy to talk about
it. You're making Gus Johnson's day today. I mean, I feel like he's doing the silent fist pump and like crying right now because he just feels very, you know, very relieved that somebody else is having this thought. And by the way, I'm 100% behind you. I've felt this a lot to myself.
There's a difference.
Throughout the years. I'm a DC United season ticket holder, but I have a Premier League thing this morning.
Good for you. Awesome. Yes. By the way, Gus Johnson.
Gus
Johnson's problem wasn't that he was American, is that he had no concept of the game. He hadn't watched or been a fan of soccer nearly long enough to be doing
in
that.
In the game. Six.
Go ahead.
You said that like 50 million times. My beef with the Premier League today and world soccer, I guess, in general is why does the transfer window have to bleed 3 weeks into the regular season of most major leagues? I'm an Everton fan as well. I get up on Saturday mornings and go down to DC to watch the games and, you know, I'm sure you've been following the John Stones thing and, you know, Everton said no. They said no again. They said no again. And Chelsea has persisted. And now we're 3 weeks into the season. We've already started, you know, gelling as a team, hopefully. And now we're probably going to lose a critical piece of our team, you know, because the trade deadline, for some reason, for no reason at all that I can think of, goes 3 weeks into the season.
Yeah, no, I think that's ridiculous, too. I think that there needs to be some serious discussion about closing the transfer window before the season starts. In fact, I saw somebody on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was, so I apologize for stealing from them. But essentially, it said the transfer window should close 24 hours before your first league match.
Why it can't open up the day after the Champions League final.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know? Yeah, you could have an entire summer to get this stuff done. I mean, we get to August, and it's like scramble, 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 but then everybody waits. And then we get, okay, well, now we're going to keep. And you know what? If you're a manager, why wouldn't you want to wait? Play a couple of games, see things, how things are going. Okay, wow, we really need a center back. Let's go buy a center back. Of course you want that evidence, but that does create a problem for, and again, I said it earlier in the show, Rob, the players have the power. If John Stones wants to go, John Stones is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
If the money is there, he's going because Everton can't afford to keep a player in their roster who doesn't want to be there. That's just a distraction for the rest of the season rather than just for the next couple of weeks.
Right.
Yeah. Rob, appreciate the call, man. I got to run. There you go. All right.
All right. Take care.
Possibly the longest show in the history of Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk, but it's a good one. And I hope you got something out of that discussion. Again, lots of ways to look at it, but clearly we're a soccer culture who is still deferring in a lot of ways. Don't trust ourselves. have an inferiority complex. Maybe it just is what it is. All right, we'll get out of here. When we come back, we'll talk. I'll come back tomorrow. Let me get that a little lower for you. We'll come back tomorrow. We'll talk about something completely different. It'll be Thursday. It'll be fun. Soccer Morning. Backheel.com/store. WorldSoccerTalk.com. Go check us out. See you later.
Did my invitations disappear? What I put my heart on every cursive letter? Tell me why the hell no one is here.